You're listening to The New Paris. I'm your host, Lindsay Tremuda. I'm back after a little break and very much ready to kick off season 8. I actually can't believe I'm in season 8, but here we are. And to do so, I'm going to start with quite a personal episode. Paris, as many of you know, has always been a refuge for foreigners, sometimes for a lifetime, others for a chapter of their lives. And one of my very best friends in Paris was drawn to many of the qualities that I've described on the show over the years and in the book, The New Paris. And she falls into one of those categories. Like me, she's been an avid storyteller and reporter, covering the many ways that old meets new in the city and how it's changed over the years. But she's gearing up to leave, which is exciting for her and sad for those of us who love her here. It seemed like the right time to have her on the show to talk about that particular Paris experience and all the things she's seen change in the almost decade that she's lived here. Here, the departure stories are rarely told, and I thought this would be a good opportunity for those listening to hear from someone who has some suggestions and lessons to share as she gears up for what's next. Sarah, enfin, welcome to the show.
Merci. Thank you for having me.
I think people need to have a little bit of context, which is how we met. We met on the job, as we might say. We met at a hotel opening. And this was what, 2013, 14?
14, may have been 15, because I arrived here November 2014.
Okay. Well, whenever it was still early on.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at you and thinking, like, I feel like I've met her before. Don't know why, don't know how, maybe in another life. And I'm sure you don't fully remember, maybe you do. I don't fully remember how it sort of blossomed into what it became. But like that was like the beginning of, well, 9 years of a friendship. I think because your departure is imminent and I'm trying to remember the beginnings and they all sort of blur together, I'm wondering what actually prompted your move here. Because, I mean, I know bits of the story, but it's worth sort of highlighting why you were drawn to sort of uproot your life.
I always say, honestly, I always say pourquoi pas. Like people always say, why'd you move to Paris? And it really was just like, why not? I was at a time in my life where I had worked in New York for over a decade as an editor, full time on staff. And I had the opportunity to move to London for a few months, which I did. And when I did that, I sort of in my head knew that I was kind of ready to leave New York. I was looking for something new, a challenge. A lot of my good friends there were settling down and getting married, having babies, and I just wasn't there. And yeah, I was just looking for a change. And so I went to London, had an amazing time, but the city didn't quite grab me. Came over to Paris a few times and was like, oh. So yeah, this is
you had been here before? Me.
I had been here before. My first time in Paris was when I was 16 on a teen tour. And then when I was in London, I came over and I met a French friend of mine, actually, who I knew from New York. And we met here. She was coming to visit family. And we met just for a weekend. And I was just, oh my God, I was totally blown away by how beautiful the city was. And I just felt like it was just more me, like everything about it, it just blew me away. And then I went back to London, finished up, and then basically went freelance from there. Was back in New York for about a year. Very quickly realized that I could not live in New York as a freelancer. I was basically Airbnb-ing my apartment almost every other week just to, you know, survive. And I was like, well, if I can't really afford to live in the city, why am I staying here? But then the funny part is actually I didn't move to Paris thinking that it was going to be more affordable for me to really live as a freelancer, but it significantly was. I mean, now my leaving, and we'll get to that, I'm sort of obviously worried about the, you know, crazy rates and prices of everything, you know? But yeah, so I had come over here with that friend. Then when I went freelance, came over again, I came over another few times, and it was basically the summer of 2014. It was August. I had traveled a lot that year. It was my first year, like going hard as a freelancer and really trying to go into travel freelancing.
Travel writing, right.
Right, because before that, it was mostly focused on lifestyle and entertainment. So I came through Paris and I this time wanted to do the live like a local thing. And I got an apartment on Rue Richard Lenoir, very, very close to where I live now, actually. And I really just like stayed in the neighborhood. I very close, honestly, to my neighborhood now, which is kind of ironic. And just loved it and met people, went out by myself and drank lots of wine and shopped and did a few museums, but it was really more just about like being in the neighborhood. And I had a night where I went out with this other French friend, the only person I knew here who I had interviewed for a story.
Adeline.
Adeline.
Yeah.
And I met, you know, we went out with all her friends to Eau des Amis, and I'll never forget that night. I mean, got so tipsy and drunk, and then basically came home and wrote on Facebook, I think I'm going to move to Paris, and then went to sleep because, you know, it was midnight. And then I woke up because everyone in the States had seen this status update, which is like, now how much time has passed. I don't update my status on Facebook anymore. But, and everyone was like, do it. That sounds great. And basically I took their advice, and I just literally 3 months later packed up and moved. I mean, granted, when I did it, I didn't really think, I mean, I don't think I thought I was going to be here.
That was my next question.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I thought I was going to live here. First of all, what even is forever, right? Like you say, you're moving somewhere.
Sure.
You know? But I was just like, yeah, I'll move to Paris. And that first year, actually, it was 9 months. It was really like an experiment. You know, I didn't give up my apartment in New York yet. My sister had moved back for work, so she was living there. So it was really just sort of like, let's see how it goes. And I came over with, I don't know, 3 suitcases, you know, not too much stuff. And I had an Airbnb for the first 2 months and then really loved it. And then eventually found a place, not easy, but did all the things that you do when you move here, and struggled, but made it happen, found an apartment in Montmartre. And that was 2 years. And it just kept going on from there. I mean, honestly, I really didn't think.
I mean, that's a common story too, whereas you come and people think like, oh, I came for a year and stayed 30, right? Or whatever it is.
And I remember those early days too, or those early years, like, you know, I remember going out to, I went out to so many things. Like I did everything, right? I was trying to meet people. I really only knew one person, Adeline, you know? And I went to, especially obviously in our industry, we get invited to a lot of stuff. But also, again, I was still new to travel writing, and I was certainly new to Paris. So I didn't have that many contacts yet, and I didn't know that many people. But going to events like the one where we met was so critical for me, because that's how I was meeting people,
right?
You know? But I look back and I remember just the events that I went to and the people that I met in those first few years. And I also remember people, oh, how long have you been here? And, oh, I just got here like 2 months ago or 3 months or 1 year or 2 years and 3 years. And, you know, everyone would just be like, oh, cute, you know, like you're new. And now I feel like here I am 9 years later, and I already see like a new generation of people who have come in, and they're all new and thinking, you know, I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I've met a few of them recently because, you know, like I'm selling a bunch of stuff, and it's just funny. It's just this cyclical, like you said, people come to Paris,
and that's been for generations.
Exactly.
Right? Like it's we're not new, but it certainly looks different than, you know, than it did initially. Of course, you have to wonder. I know so much has changed over the years. We've collaborated on projects, spent hours discussing, you know, food and culture and the indignities of our job, and you know, but also the love of reporting. And so we've been, you've reported different things, things that I think are very interesting, that involved even the mayor and her son doing this crazy swimming expedition. In that time, you know, I think we both have seen some key changes. In your mind, what have been some of the biggest ones in the last 9 years, both good or bad?
I think the first thing that comes to mind for me, and going back also to when I first moved here, like, I met a lot of people through yoga, because that to me was such a common ground, like a commonality. Like I loved yoga. In terms of language, you know, maybe I couldn't understand them when they were speaking French, but there's also Sanskrit, and yoga is all about the breath and movement. Anyway, the point is yoga was sort of a salvation for me in terms of meeting people, but also just a place where I could go and really feel myself. So when I first moved here, there were like no yoga studios, and I just remember having to go quite far to find yoga studios. And now there are so many. I mean, you can't walk a block without finding, I mean, maybe not that much, but there are just so many yoga studios now, which is amazing and lovely. I mean, I have to say, as someone who's, you know, I mean, I've been practicing for well over 20, 30 years. I mean, a long time. I do think that, you know, like with a lot of things that the country or the city has adapted internationally, it's they sort of like got on the trend of like, let's do yoga and make a very shiny, pretty yoga studio with like an English name maybe, and like, you know, pretty paint and IKEA furniture and dried flowers. But like the actual practice, sometimes it feels like it's not quite, not that it's not real, but
not sophisticated.
They're sort of
enough,
like calling it in a little bit, you know,
right.
Like there's just so many of them. It's almost become like factory. Like that's not to say that there aren't incredible yoga studios in this city, which there are. I mean, Jiva Mukti opened a really big space
on the canal,
which is really amazing. And
that one's more hippie though, right? Bohemian?
I mean, kind of. It's just Jiva Mukti is like a specific practice of yoga, which you either have to like that or not. But I think the thing for me, you know, and not to get too insider baseball on yoga, but I think that was a big change for me, was seeing all these yoga studios come, see how the French sort of adapt and practice, what they get into, what they don't,
and fitness more generally,
100%.
Right?
And that's another thing that I saw different.
My God.
Like, I remember, I mean, now so many more people, there's so many more studios and like cycling studios, obviously Dynamo had just opened,
we went to that.
And then now, I mean, you have a lot of boxing studios and dance classes and like so much more of that. And then also, I mean, it is such a cliche to say this or a stereotype, but like, I remember thinking like, oh, I can't leave the house in my yoga pants. Like I can't go from, you know, I was living in Montmartre down to by Madeleine, which is where the yoga studio that I would go to. I can't go in my yoga gear. I just went. And I don't know if that was me telling myself that just because that's like the reputation. But I mean, Parisians really do. They don't dress up, but they don't walk around in
sweatpants. They wear their normal clothes,
you know? And so I always did that. I always made sure to like change, you know? And now I definitely see people,
because it's become cool. Fitness is cool. Wearing the best gear is cool.
Yeah.
And I think I had done some research on like what really prompted that. And I think it was sort of like when all the big fashion houses started incorporating, you know, sneakers and streetwear.
Yeah.
And then that trickles down and then it becomes cool. Right.
Yes.
So yeah, there's less of a stigma when you're going to go. Now, would you go, you know, would we still today, you know, wear spandex and go across town on public transport? Maybe not. But it's definitely, I mean, God, you were here. You should imagine what it was like in 2006. I mean, Jesus, I would see women wear full faces of makeup on a Sunday morning when they've clearly just left the house to go run on a treadmill in Converse sneakers, by the way. I mean, really.
I mean, I don't like, and I say this when I go back to the States, like I personally, I'm not going to go, well, certainly not to like a spin class because I get crazy sweaty and spin, and then go like shopping, you know, like I am going to want to shower and change. But now it's funny, actually, like I wouldn't go out and like do something, but I will maybe just leave my clothes on and take the metro and go back to my house. And I don't know if that's the society or it's just me and I'm just sort of don't care anymore and I've gotten used to it.
Maybe both.
But that's sort of been, you know, that's been something that I've noticed. I've also noticed so much English.
Oh, yeah. I was taught that came up at a dinner recently. Yeah.
Not even just in speaking, but like I'm sure, you know, in terms of new places opening up or companies or restaurants, and there's just so much English being used everywhere.
Often incorrectly.
Incorrectly. Which we're always, right? Amy and I were always saying we wanted to start that company where we help French people use English properly. Because like you could do it. But I'm sure Americans do it all the time, right? Like they're always trying to use a French word and you were like, you don't use oulala in that form or that, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just everyone does it because they don't really know, you know?
But what about food? Because you and I have written a lot about food. That's a huge change.
Huge change. Have seen so much more street food. I mean, obviously
it's not really street food.
Exactly. But a lot of so much international cuisine, right? I mean, I don't know.
Obviously,
you've been here longer than I am, but I just feel like
huge.
Way beyond the obvious like pizza and stuff, but like so much Israeli food, you know, mixing Middle Eastern from so many different cultures and countries, Greek, a lot of Greek, I mean, Indian. I mean, honestly, there's so much international cuisine.
That's accelerated, obviously, in the last handful of years,
too. And a lot more casual places too, you know, and that's what I mean by street food, like places that you can't necessarily eat there. And also, of course, getting things to go,
right?
Or delivery. I mean, that wasn't a thing, you know, 9 years ago.
Can't be on a budget to eat that way, though. It's not cheap.
No, I know. Well,
and it's not cheap in New York either. Actually, when you look at, you know, people joke about, you know, once you factor in the tax and the service and the whatever.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah, but you know, just to say that at least the practice or the behavior is definitely more part of
accepted.
You know,
I mean, I still always joke, like I remember, you know, because I would eat it. In New York, I would like just grab a banana on my way to work or something, and I'd eat a banana going down the street. And I remember doing that when I first got here, and people looking at me funny. And it just like, you don't, well, also they just don't eat bananas like that. Like they cut bananas. The only thing that you will ever see the French eating walking down the street is a baguette or, yeah, or a sandwich. I mean, not even a pastry, which I appreciate. I honestly appreciate like sitting down and savoring your meals. It's one, right, of the things that I very much admire about, mm-hmm, the French, you know?
Well, so those are some very key, and obviously they're part of a cultural and societal shift. I'm also wondering if you think that Paris has become easier to adapt to for foreigners versus when you arrived. I mean, I felt that it's at least easier maybe to find a certain community through social media. I mean, when I was here, it was nascent and like there was a lot of isolation, and that was a real struggle for me because I was going through my husband's network, which was already pretty lean. And I really had to figure out how to meet people. And social media at least takes some of that pressure away. Doesn't mean it will foster close relationships, but maybe the barrier to connecting with people or reaching out to people is lower.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, social media changed everything in terms of helping people meet. I mean, even not even just like in following people, but in following businesses and, mm-hmm, restaurants and how to know where to go. I mean, now there's things like, there's like this new thing on, it's called Time. Are you seeing these ads for this thing called Time Left?
No.
My friend Charlene just did it. And you basically, it's a way, you sign up for a dinner. Time Left? I think it's called Time Left. You sign up for a dinner with strangers, of like seven strangers. And it's not necessarily about the food. It's going to just eat with seven strangers. And you don't necessarily know where you're going or who you're meeting. And she did it. And she said it was wonderful. And she would totally do it again. So, and that's something that I only saw on Instagram.
Right.
You know, so definitely opportunities like that have made it so much easier to meet people. I mean, I don't think, you know, I mean, that's one of the differences I remember also. Like, I remember when I first got here on the train, being on the metro and looking around and seeing people actually reading books and, you know, or just sort of listening to music and just sitting there and remarking like, wow, back in New York, everyone's got their head in a phone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now it is definitely the same. Like it took a few years, but like now everyone has their face in a phone. I rarely see people actually reading a book anymore. And it is because our phones provide so much, including like social media, where you're meeting people and, you know, but that is.
Yeah, but we've forgotten how to perhaps build community off those tools.
Yeah.
Right, right. And certainly just feeling like, you know, you have more access to figure out who are the people with these like-minded interests, right?
Yes.
Like we used to have the supper clubs, you know, sort of like what you're describing. Verju used to, you know, started from the beginning with a supper club, and it was with strangers.
Which is exciting and unique, right, to try and do something like that. I mean, it's certainly, you know, putting yourself out there, right? I mean, that's how I met so many of my friends, were just like going to things alone. You'd never know, yeah, who you're going to meet. But like you said, like at least with social media, you have you're following someone because you have like-minded interests.
Yeah.
I mean, when you go to these events, you literally don't know who you're, yeah, going to sit next to. But honestly, I mean, when I think back, and this wasn't social media, but that's how I met Charlie, right? I just went to some food event. That's how I met Jess. You know, we met, I mean, that's how you meet people. I mean,
right,
and I always stand by this, and you know, I write a lot about traveling alone or doing things alone. Is the way you meet people. I mean, obviously it's amazing to have a partner or friends that you do things with, but if you are alone, how are you going to meet people? You continue going out alone, and then you're going to have to strike up a conversation with someone unless
it forces you,
you know?
So I don't really believe in spending too much time on regrets. I think personally, I think, you know, life is too short, and but I am curious if there's anything you wish you had done differently in your years in Paris, or something you didn't discover that you wish you had. You know, this is, you're in your last full week here. Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, not really. It's funny, a bunch of people had said, like, I hate the term bucket list, but like,
me
you
too.
Know, what are the things that you haven't done? And really I've been so fortunate to have done so much, both through my job and being freelance and flexible and just having the time to be able to go to a museum in the middle of the day, or, you know, see an exhibit or And I've had so many visitors, and every time they come, I do something different, or that I have. I mean, my mom was just here, and she really wanted to go up the Eiffel Tower, which I had done before, but I had never climbed it. And so
we
climbed it. And so that was something that was really cool. And I'd always wanted to ride the Ferris wheel in the Tuileries, which a friend of mine. So we did that. But honestly, I can't even really think of anything that I haven't done that I really want to do. And as far as regrets, not really. I mean, like you, I don't really have regrets. I think we make our choices and decisions and for a reason, and you go with them and they send you in one direction. And I'm not a what if type of person. Once I make the decision, which it does take me a while to make the decisions.
But you have a newsletter called Overthinking
exactly,
It.
Exactly. I mean, I think if anything, sometimes it's hard for me to ask for help. Mm. And I think a lot of times the easiest way to ask for help is to maybe throw money at a problem. Mm. And I didn't necessarily or don't have the money to throw at problems. But it's hard for me to, like, you know, call up Amy's friendship and be like, you know, hey, can you help me figure out how to change my internet service or hang this on a wall or, you know, or anyone's partner or friend or, you know, it's hard for me to do that because I've just relied so much on help. It's on my doing things myself rather. But I do think, yeah, there are certain aspects of living here that are very frustrating and part of why I'm leaving, that I wonder if I'd asked for help more or if I had paid for the accountant to do this or the visa guy to help me with this or, you know, would they have really changed anything? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'd certainly be down a lot more money than
right.
You know what I mean? I mean, but some maybe in that respect, I mean, but the thing is, then I look back and I'm like, I did it myself. Boom. You know,
right,
like,
right.
And I figured it out. And how gratifying is that, you know? But other than that, no.
Well, I think that's a healthy way to be leaving.
Yeah.
Hopefully you don't hold any resentment, but we'll get to some of the things you won't miss. I also want to touch on something because you and I arrived in very different circumstances. I arrived, I was still a student. I hadn't yet worked. I didn't have a career yet. You know, I was turning 21. That's a very different journey to a foreign country than when you have had a career and you leave mid-career to either pursue a different career or a continuation elsewhere. I'm wondering, I was going to say, like, I don't think necessarily one is necessarily easier than the other, at least emotionally speaking, but do you have any advice for people who might be listening who is considering a mid-career shift as you did? And like any kind of pay it forward lessons, because I can't really speak to that experience personally.
I think maybe be humble. I think letting go of ego. I mean, it's something that I'm still working on, you know, because you go from being up here or at a certain level and then sort of maybe having to drop a bit or to relearn things or learn something new. Yeah, be gracious. Let go of expectations.
Mm.
I mean, again,
tricky.
These are all things I'm still working on. But yeah, I mean, having an idea in your head of what you want and like going for that is, of course, admirable. That's what we all do. But I also think that it's important to be flexible.
Because the culture
change.
Is different,
yeah,
right? Salaries
exactly,
are different.
Exactly.
Opportunities are different.
And you're different, you know? Like,
that's true.
You're different. You're in a different place. I mean, people always ask me, you know, about dating, and we won't go into that, but it's like, you know, what's the difference dating in Paris versus dating in New York? And it's like, it's so hard to pinpoint. There are so many variables, you know, like I'm older. It's a new, the culture is different. Now there's apps in the, you know what I mean? So it's like, there are all these variables in all these situations. So it's like, how do you just to be flexible and amenable to all those shifts, really? And I guess, and this is now ironically kind of where I'm not really at again, but don't be afraid to start from scratch asking for help,
right.
You know, and like be willing to, yeah. I mean, because it is humbling to come in and see other people maybe doing what you want to do and having to like obviously work your way to a certain point.
There's a lot of fake it till you make it too when you're going to a new country, right? Or a new place.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like you, or it can squash you, right? So you just have to sort of, they're like growing pains
right.
in a new place.
And it's just funny because I think back to like when I first got here wanting to do all the things that eventually I did. And then now, you know, like, you know, write a Paris guide or, you know what I mean? But the thing is it took me a long time to get to the point where I was asked to write a Paris guide, of course, because when I first moved here, who am I to tell anyone where to go? I just got here. I don't know anything. And it's like, someone like you is going to look at me like, who's this girl? Like, she just got, you know what I mean?
Unfortunately, like, it doesn't stop other people from doing that. It doesn't. Which makes us both now insane.
It is really frustrating, right? But then the thing is touching upon the growth is like, I wanted to do that. I worked my way up. I did it. And now I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. I've written a gazillion guides to Paris. Yeah. I could write them with my head, you know, my eyes closed and let someone else do that now. You know, I mean, that is life, right? We're constantly evolving and pushing ourselves.
Your desires change. Exactly. You don't need that anymore. You're reaching for something bigger.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So friendships are hard to leave behind. This isn't the first time I've had friends leave Paris, but obviously it's not, you're not abandoning us. It's just a different form. But so are rituals and your favorite places. Those things are hard to leave behind. What are some of both of those that you're going to miss? Your favorite places and maybe some rituals?
Rituals, I guess market shopping. I love going to the market and I just really like food shopping. It's funny to me, especially in America, so many of my friends, I mean, I think it's different when you have family and a lot of people that you're shopping for and maybe, you know, big jobs and the time is of essence. But I really enjoy food shopping and I love going to the market and seeing all the different, you know, seasonal produce and looking and being like, oh, there's girofle, it's you know, it's fall and here's clementines and now it's winter. And I just love seeing the changing of the seasons in the market. So I'm definitely going to miss that. Rituals. I mean, I loved my apartment, which you found with me, Lindsay.
That's right.
Convinced me to get my apartment.
Oh, I didn't even remember that. But yeah, I visited it with you.
You did.
Yeah.
You visited it with me I went by myself the first time and then I went back the second time. You also helped me say the metro line, Faye d'Herbe Chalani, which was really hard for me to get for a long time. I was like, how could I get an apartment in this neighborhood? I can't pronounce the metro station. And so you got me there. You got me there. But yeah, no, so this apartment, you came and you was like, you can't not take this apartment.
That's
and of
great
course,
light. Beautiful.
It was amazing. I mean, the apartment itself, it's a small little thing, but it's an amazing, it's been a great space. And the view is unbelievable. I remember us standing at that window and you looking down that street.
I was like, this is the view.
Yeah. I have an amazing, anyone who comes to my apartment, first, anyone who sees my apartment on Instagram always thinks it's bigger than it is. And then they get there and they're like, oh, it's small. But then they go to the windows and they're like, oh yeah, I can see. And it's true. So I will miss sitting at my table by the window. Oh no, I'm not going to cry.
I figured that could happen.
drinking my coffee, which then eventually became tea. And just every morning. So that was my ritual. I would get up and I'd sit at the table.
I quite like that you're saying something. Your ritual is the one in the apartment and not necessarily out.
Yeah.
Somewhere out.
I mean, because that's my home. That was my everyday. Right. I didn't really. I mean, that's the one thing that I did every day was I would get up and I'd make my coffee or my tea. I mean, and then I remember how it morphed. You know, there was a period when I was doing my morning pages. So I did The Artist's Way. And that was a ritual in the morning. And I sat in that same spot at the table looking at. And it's funny because sometimes people. It's a weird setup, as you know, in my apartment, because I've got the slanted ceilings because I'm on the sixth floor. But people often ask me why I didn't put the couch against the window there. And my answer was I wanted to be able to sit and look out the window. I wanted to be
right,
able to.
And write.
And write.
Yeah.
And so to me, like all these rituals are the things that I'll miss. So my morning pages. And remember when I was doing coffee and coloring during the pandemic?
Oh, well, yeah. Who wasn't doing something kind of niche during the pandemic?
So I sat in that same spot and I colored.
And we had the best weather during the pandemic.
I know.
Like the light, the sun.
So
was like
I sat in front of those windows and. So I will miss that apartment and those that view. So that was a ritual for me. I'll miss like a lot of the people in my like, but this is something that I hope that I'll find wherever I, you know, land and make my next home. But there were a lot of people on my block, especially like Jean-Francois, my ham guy.
Oh yeah, he gave you some free stuff all the time, right?
I had his sandwich, he calls it the Hamsburger the other day. With Joe, I introduced her to. It was, you got, oh, you don't eat the, right, yeah, okay.
I don't eat the pork,
but it's a really good sandwich. And then Steven downstairs at Nomad.
Oh, yeah, the coffee place. Yeah,
it's just like, it's such an amazing block. And honestly, like the neighborhood is just, so I will miss that. The garden, the Jardin de Folie Titon, which is just around the corner. And funnily enough, in my old apartment in New York on Greenwich Avenue, I also had a very small little garden that I loved sitting in or just going to. And yeah, I'll just go there and, you know, take a phone call or read a book or listen. And during the pandemic, also, I brought my yoga mat and I practiced in that little garden. And so I'll miss that. I mean, there are other places like, okay, so outside of my neighborhood, I really love, I don't go often, but when I am there, I actually tend, I started doing this the last few years ago, but every year on Yom Kippur, I would, if while I'm fasting, just like taking the day to reflect, trying to be off my phone, I go to an exhibit. In the last few years, I always go, had been going to the Palais Galleria, right?
The fashion one.
Yes,
yeah.
The fashion. And that building itself is so beautiful, and they have this incredible garden on the other side, like on the river side of it. So I really love sitting in that park, in that garden. I think it's just, I'll miss that familiarity, the consistency of like seeing those same people.
Right. And the daily life.
And the daily life.
The daily life stuff is what you're describing, actually, which is quite nice that, you know, you're not saying, you know, the ritual of like, I don't know. It doesn't have to be a specific bar or a specific restaurant, because ultimately you went out a lot.
And I did.
Our job. That's part of our job.
I mean, like, listen, don't get me wrong. I brought you over the Chasson au Pommes from Cyril Lignac this morning. Yeah. I will miss that. And I will miss Miznon.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the funny thing is look, listen to the plate. Okay, so you've got a pastry, but Miznon is, you know, Israeli pita sandwiches.
You can get that
in New York. I love deux fois plus de piment, but like, you know.
You can get Chinese.
I can get
spicy Chinese.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, there are small things like, but I can't know. There's, you know, mocha nuts. Yeah, sure. You know, it's nice to have neighbors and restaurants like who know you and make incredible food. But yeah.
And not to harp on the negative, but what won't you miss?
Yeah. I guess.
And if you hear anything, it's because my cat, you're someone you've watched times, is sitting right behind my head. Very dangerous.
I will not miss. I mean, this is just. I will not miss using Deeple every freaking 2 seconds. You know what? You don't need to use Deeple.
What is that?
Deeple is a translation app. It's better than Google Translate.
Oh.
I will not miss having to like do stuff like not having to use Deeple, using converters when looking when cooking, because I still cannot compute
grams.
I still use Fahrenheit. I did make it to the 24-hour clock, so let's see if I can keep that going.
I do love that.
Yeah. I will not miss shoe shopping because I am very much in between a 37 and a 38.
And they don't do
it. Very annoying.
Yeah, they don't love the half sizes here.
No, I am very much a half size. I mean, this is a big one, but the pas possible, I'm sorry. It's just...
Oh, everything is...
It's a cliche, but it really does get to you. And the whole, like, no...
First.
The immediate no first is really just frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will not miss that. I think like sometimes there's a bit of a laziness here that I don't miss. I mean, I very much appreciate the idea of, you know, working to live. I truly, truly do. But I think that there is a little bit of a laziness here that people just don't have a fire under their butt to like actually do things.
Well, and sometimes it's because they're like, well, that's not in my job description,
exactly.
So I'm not going to do it.
Exactly. It's just that, like, everywhere, you know, and I just, coming from a culture where obviously, like, customer service is king and people are doers and achievers, and that's not to say that some of that could be unhealthy because it can.
Yeah.
But the complete opposite of that is just like, it boggles my mind sometimes.
Well, there's an ease that you're going to find certainly when you're back in the States, which you've already told us that you felt when you've gone back for longer periods of time.
It is. I feel like I've gotten to where I could get with the language, honestly. Like I took lots of classes and courses and exchanges, and I did the best I could, and I just hit a wall, and I got to a place where, you know, so yeah, I'm very much looking forward to not having to use Deeple or Google Translate and being able to be understood and to understand other people and not feel kind of like an idiot, you know, when I'm trying to make a point. and just, yeah, so I won't miss that. I mean, but there's so many things I will miss. Like, I'll miss I mean, I always say, what do people always ask me what I love the most about Paris, and it always sounds like very wooey to say this, but it's the light. And my mom, when she was just here, she was like, she was recognizing it too. And it's like, the way the light hits the buildings is something that I will miss tremendously. And then, you know, like I was saying earlier, the seasonal market changes. What did I say? I said Maison before, but okay, this is really silly. But there's these two things from the Super U. The pâte de crème. It's so ridiculously good.
The pâte de crème,
yes.
What, like a
it's just
like a
chocolate
pudding? Oh, a chocolate pudding.
Oh my God,
okay.
I love it so much. It's the most silly
it?
Thing. It's the Super U brand.
Oh my God, wow.
It is so good. They also have this fruits and fiber cereal.
Oh my God.
Anyway, okay. But I will miss Solds.
Oh, the sales.
I just love the sales twice yearly. It's just, I love that they make it, it's separate. It just really feels, and you know, girl loves a good deal. This is, you're talking to a Lohmann's girl here, which maybe you don't know Lohmann's, but Lohmann's was like a discount designer. It was my favorite place ever. And so I just love a good sale and deal. And my mom was saying the other day, like, it's just more special to have it only two times a year.
Well,
that's
also government controlled, but yeah.
Right.
Regulated.
Right. Monoprix, obviously I'll miss Monoprix.
Oh yeah, who doesn't love a Monoprix?
Specifically the kids section. I love shopping for Calvin and Dahlia, my niece, nephew and niece there. Obviously the healthcare. Though, that's a double-edged sword for me though, because it's amazing how affordable it is. But sometimes it's frustrating. I mean, you really have to do so much of it yourself. And then it also always comes back to the language for me. A lot of it I don't understand. Right. And I just won't miss having to like jump through hoops. And that goes for the healthcare and that goes for everything else. There's like a gazillion hoops that you need to jump through.
The hoops, yes.
For anything and everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, yeah, I'm working on a post for my newsletter about things that I'll miss and things that I won't. And the scale, I mean, they're almost equal. They're almost equal.
It sounds like the balance was pretty equal then between like the pros and cons and the good things and the bad things here. So then why leave?
I guess the TLDR is it's just time. I think that it's just time for a new chapter. I mean, if I give you, you know, the real answer that I worked on with my therapist about a year ago was, I think I just, the city and just all of its idiosyncrasies and maybe a lot of the items on the won't miss list started to rise a little higher. And I think the city started to lose its luster a little bit for me. It's not that I don't still walk around gawking at that light, you know, because I do every day. I mean, it will always be so beautiful to me. But things just started to become a little everyday, a little mundane. And, you know, I am... However way you want to look at it, whether it's fortune or, you know, I it's just me. I have the ability to just pick up and try something new and go somewhere different and change it up. And I think also it was some of the challenges that we spoke about in terms of the French language and the bureaucracy and just things just continued to feel so hard for me. And I just am at a point in my life where I don't think things need to be that hard all the time.
Right.
And if I am going to be doing this thing called life by myself, which many times is really lovely and wonderful, honestly, I want to feel comfortable doing it. And I want to, you know, I'm up for a challenge. That's why I moved here. And I will continue to pursue challenges wherever I go. I think they make you stronger, they make you a better person. But there gets to be a point where it's just some things don't need to be so hard all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think I just reached that point.
And even for your career, you think it's the right move?
I mean, that'll be determined, but I do. I think like the same thing. I got to the point where I could get here doing what I am doing. And I'm not necessarily getting the assignments that I want to be getting. I want more. I want bigger. And I don't, I mean, I maybe if I stayed a little longer and kept doing it, it's just not enough for me anymore.
And that's fair, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
and in your defense, you're like many of other Parisians who eventually leave and go to, you know, a countryside or a smaller French city and decide like, you know, I'm ready for the next thing.
Yeah. And what a great privilege to be able to do that, you know, And honestly, as you know this, there is a more, not the word is not logistical, but a specific reason that my propriétaire, who, mm-hmm. you know, wants to move into my apartment and my lease was ending. So that was like the sort of real kick that, okay, if you're having all these thoughts anyway, that maybe it's time for a shift in career and it's time for to change up your location, the language too much, the challenge, all these things, this seemed like a natural time to do it. I'm leaving anyway.
It helps you rip the Band-Aid.
It helps me rip the Band-Aid. And yeah. we know how hard it is to find an apartment in Paris. So it's like, why give myself another challenge, you know? So it just, yeah, it comes back around to it's just time. It's just time.
I think that's a fair answer. I mean, we want you to come back.
Yes.
This has to be your partial home forever, right? Because, you know, at least me and Joanne will be here forever. Amy, who's fed by a Frenchman, if you're listening, she's been on this show before. I guess what I will say is that our listeners have a huge body of work that you've written that they can go through and read on your website. And that is also a lasting souvenir, I guess, in some ways of this time and all the reporting you've done and, you know, the emotions you've expressed through personal essays during this time. And I think that is going to be the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, you just gave me chills. Thanks. I didn't even like really think of it that way, but yeah, it's really nice to know that I have all that, you know, they are sort of records of what I've seen. What I've seen and done and learned, both personally and professionally. So, yeah.
And if you're listening and you want a writer, a very talented writer to join your organization, you know who to contact.
Preach. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Sarah.
Thank you. Je t'aime.
Thanks for listening to the New Paris podcast. If you enjoy the show, it would mean the world if you would rate and leave a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, à bientôt.